Good afternoon, Tri-States. This is IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. And we are reading from the Friday, July 30th, 2021 edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. It's Ken in the regular Friday reader seat. And we'll begin with our first piece from Above the Fold. And it starts with a huge picture of a man holding a big turkey leg. And it says beneath it, as the caption reads, Mike Fowler of Steve's Meat Shop cooks turkey legs Thursday at the Dubuque County Fair. And our piece is all about the food. Let's eat vendors dish at fair. About 20 vendors have set up shop at the Dubuque County Fair this week to offer attendees their fair food fix. In between partaking in the fair's various entertainment opportunities, attendees can get their fill of fried food and cold drinks. Vendors at the fair took some time this week to tell the Telegraph Herald about this year's best sellers. Steve's Meat Shop, fair favorite pulled pork nachos. The nachos came around about 7 or 8 years ago, said Mike Fowler, who was working at the stand. It's something a little different. We have the fixings out for people to add. Taylor's Curious Orange, fair favorite, Orange Frosty. It's ice cream with orange pop, co-owner Abby Taylor said. We also sell slushies and orange shake-ups, which is orange lemonade. Gitter Fried, fair favorite, 14-inch corn dog. It's huge, owner Michael Rupert said. It's made fresh, hand-dipped, and it's ready in just 4 minutes. Rockin' 5K BBQ and Shack, fair favorite, pig pen. It's a big bread bowl, the size of a paper plate, with mac and cheese, said Rebecca Graham, who was taking orders for the business. Then it has pork, beans, coleslaw, and barbecue sauce. Adobe's Mexican Grill, fair favorite, customizable burritos. It's a make-your-own, said owner Jamie Salazar. We have rice, different veggies, and meats. We have mild sauce and hot Diablo sauce. We have the passion, freshness, and hard work. Dubuque County Dairy Promotion Association, fair favorite, cotton candy twist ice cream. It's blue and pink cotton candy flavors, said Mike Ball, who was volunteering at the stand. It's spun together for a whimsical carnival sensation. Knights of Columbus Food Court, fair favorite, chicken strips. The kids love them, said Carrie Reuter, who was working at the stand, and I think our booth is popular because we give back to the community. Dubuque Community YMCA YWCA Lemonade Stand. Fair favorite, of course, lemonade. We have sweet and low for anyone who is diabetic, so we have something for everybody, said Richard Fabb, who is working at the lemonade stand. Dubuque Morning Optimist Club, fair favorite, funnel cake. It's a fair staple, said volunteer Sue Bublitz. The only place I know you can get funnel cake is at the fair. Chuckie's, fair favorite, breaded pork tenderloin. I'm not sure what it is that drives people crazy, said David Conrady, who was running the stand. They like the breading and the way we tenderize the meat. Shriner's Popcorn Stand, fair favorite, of course, white popcorn. We use a special oil and seasoning salt, said David Patton, who was making the popcorn. It's the least expensive at the fair, and everybody loves popcorn. St. Paul Lutheran Church, fair favorite, chocolate malt. There's just so many people who are chocoholics, said church member Nancy Henry, and I throw a little extra love in there. Just for kicks, fair favorite, shaved ice. We go through about 30 gallons of ice a day, said Christine Efferding, who was working at the stand. It's fun to see the kids come back for more with their faces still blue from flavoring. 4-H food stand. Fair favorite, clover fries. They have Parmesan cheese and garlic oil, said volunteer Tracy Grun. They're so good and different. Soul Mobile Cafe. Fair favorite, catfish nuggets. Everything is all homemade, said owner Pops Grant. It's food from our souls to yours. The Chocolate Hog. Fair favorite, Sunday newspaper. It's the biggest thing on our menu, said owner Steve Geis. It's a giant 16-inch tortilla filled with smoked beef, chicken, pork, Monterey cheese, zesty coleslaw, more cheese, and barbecue sauce. The Popper with North American Midway Entertainment. Fair favorite, strawberry and orange cotton candy. It's sugary, said employee Sabrina Creamer. Who doesn't come to a fair and want a bunch of sugar? Midway Lemonade Stand. Fair favorite, shake up. It's 32 ounces of fresh lemonade, said employee Tracy Lewis. It comes in a refillable cup so they can keep coming back. Midway Funnel Cake Stand. Fair favorite, fried Oreos. It tastes like warm chocolate cake right out of the oven, said employee Clara Hayes. That is quite the lineup of food offerings. And now our next piece from Above the Fold. Drought persists. Despite a dousing early Thursday, Dubuque still has received 30% less rain than normal this year, as Dubuque County and many of its neighbors remain in drought conditions. The U.S. Drought Monitor issued its latest update on Thursday morning. In the Telegraph Herald coverage area, a small area right around Dubuque is categorized as being in severe drought, as is an area that covers the southernmost portion of Grant County, Wisconsin. The southwestern portion of Lafayette County, Wisconsin, and a sliver of northernmost Joe Davies County, Illinois. Moderate drought is reported in the vast majority of Clayton, Delaware, and Dubuque counties in Iowa, Joe Davies County, Illinois, and Crawford, Grant, Iowa, and Lafayette counties in Wisconsin. The majority of Jackson and Jones counties in Iowa simply are considered abnormally dry. According to National Weather Service meteorologist Dave Cousins, the storm early Thursday doubled Dubuque's July rainfall total. But that said more than about how little rain had come before it than the storm's potency, and not much more is forecast in the immediate future. Through yesterday, Dubuque had 1.58 inches this month, he said on Thursday. Since this morning, though, it's nearly doubled to 3.2 inches for the month total. The normal month-to-date is 4.5 inches. And July followed a very dry first half of the year, Cousins said. Dubuque had received 30% less rain than normal this year. The normal for this time of year is 23.19 inches. We're sitting now at 16.22 inches, he said. Earlier this week, Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Naig issued a statement of concern in his weekly crop progress and condition report. We're hearing about moisture-stressed crops, especially in the drought region, he said. That region included the top third of Iowa, including counties in the tri-state area. What's more, Thursday's rain did not reach the whole area. Zach Tim, conservation agronomist for the Dubuque County Soil and Water Conservation District, said his family farm outside of Monticello, Iowa, did not receive any precipitation. Still, in speaking with other area farmers, Tim said most are not too concerned yet. Any concern so far relates in part to the soil type of a farmer's land. If they have any sandy ground or any clay ground, it's hard to have this little moisture, he said. But in a lot of Dubuque County, there's a lot of silt loam. I wouldn't say guys with silt loam are overly worried because we had near record yields in some of those fields last year with low rain levels. Tim said, however, that corn especially is at a critical point in its development. We're sitting a lot better than you'd think we are, but we could use cooler weather and a little rain, he said. Things could go south. Also, if you have dark black soil, that's going to pay off in this year. Unfortunately, Cousins said, there's likely not much rain on the horizon. There's another chance Friday into Saturday, but it will be the last for a while, he said. It doesn't look like a shift to a wetter pattern. Even long range, we're not looking for any improvement at this time. Still, below normal rainfall is expected. Cousins noted that this week's rains caused a brief rust in the heat that had lingered in the area recently. We're looking at weekend highs of around 80 with a lower dew point, so it will be more comfortable, he said. That's near normal for this time of year. But then, above average temperatures are expected again. Our final front page piece, Iowa amends law regarding fluoride. With a drink of water, local residents not only are quenching their thirst, but also keeping their teeth healthy. For decades, area residents have benefited from the infusion of fluoride in their local drinking water. A new Iowa law, which went into effect July 1st, requires municipalities to give residents 90 days' notice if they plan to end fluoridation of their water supply. While many cities in the tri-state area add fluoride in their water, several do not, including multiple in Dubuque County, though for varying reasons. We have never added fluoride to our water, said Ronnie Kramer, Public Works Director for the City of Epworth. It's something the city has never even considered doing, as far as I know. Fluoride is a naturally occurring mineral that has been found to reduce cavities by at least 25% in children and adults by creating resistance to acids that cause tooth decay. The use of fluoride in drinking water is promoted by the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Iowa Department of Public Health. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services recommends that communities aim to have about 7/10 milligrams of fluoride per liter of water. The city of Dubuque has added fluoride to its water since 1954. Water Department Manager Christopher Lester said the city's water supply naturally contains about 0.2 milligrams of fluoride per liter, so the city infuses about 0.5 milligrams more through flow-controlled pumps. Lester said fluoride works to improve health among residents, and its addition is relatively cheap, costing about $10,000 annually. IDPH estimates that for every $1 spent on community fluoridation, $38 is saved in local dental treatment costs. Other surrounding communities that add fluoride to their water include Galena and East Dubuque in Illinois, Platteville and Lancaster in Wisconsin, and Maquoketa, Bellevue, and Manchester in Iowa. Lancaster City Administrator David Carlson said he believes the health benefits of fluoride can be seen readily. I grew up in the 60s and got a mouthful of cavities, Carlson said. My kids grew up in the 80s and some of them don't have any cavities at all. Several cities in the area do not actively add fluoride to their water, and statewide, about 20% of communities do not. Since 2017, 15 Iowa communities totaling more than 25,000 residents have stopped adding fluoride to water, the state public health department reported. Locally, the city of Dyersville, Iowa, has not added fluoride in its water for at least several decades, said City Public Works Director John Wansinger. That is because about 0.8 milligrams of fluoride per liter is already infused naturally in the local water supply. It occurs underground naturally to the point that we don't need to do it, Wansnyder said. It fail it falls within that sweet spot that is considered healthy. Officials in Cascade and Piasta in Iowa also confirmed they do not add fluoride to their water for the same reason. In Epworth, Kramer said there is a minimal amount of fluoride in the water naturally, less than the recommended 0.7 milligrams per liter, but officials have never chosen to add it due to the cost and their belief that there are health concerns. It seems that there is enough research against it as much as there is for it, Kramer said. The council has never seen it as important enough to invest in. Kramer pointed to concerns over the potential health impacts on children that could occur from adding fluoride to the water, but leading health authorities, including the American Academy of Pediatrics, American Dental Association, and CDC, all state that water fluoridation is safe for children. The CDC in 1999 named the fluoridation of drinking water as one of the 10 greatest public health achievements in the U.S. from 1900 to 1999. Kramer emphasized that he is not a medical professional and that the decision not to add fluoride in the local water supply has been maintained by Epworth City Council members. For the majority of local cities, fluoride in water is still seen as a positive. It's pretty simple. Fluoride in the water makes your teeth cleaner, said Mark Moran, Galena City Administrator. It's no more complicated than that. We turn the page now to news from Dubuque and our lead article, Law Enforcement. Have patience with traffic around MLB game. From Dyersville, law enforcement officials stress patience on game day as they prepare for throngs of people to descend upon Dyersville for next month's Major League Baseball game. Large crowds are expected to take part in festivities surrounding the August 12th game between the Chicago White Sox and New York Yankees at the Field of Dreams. Patience is going to be required on everyone's part, Dyersville Police Chief Brent Schrader said. I think the biggest thing is people just need to slow down. Schroeder said that in addition to his department and the Dubuque County Sheriff's Department, the Iowa State Patrol also will help with traffic during the game and the Beyond the Game activities set for August 11 and 12. He also noted that the FBI and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security helped with planning safety measures. When you have a national event, those entities are involved from the start so they're aware of any incident that may arise, Schroeder said. Schroeder said that on August 11th, his staff will focus their energy on the Free Country Concert, which will be at Commercial Club Park with headliners Maddie and Tay. Officers will ensure concertgoers cross busy streets safely, he said, as people may have to walk some distance from their car to the concert venue. There currently are no shuttles planned, he said. He noted that private security also will be working at the concert. Dubuque County Sheriff Joe Kennedy said his department will focus its efforts around the Field of Dreams site, which will be closed the week of the game. He noted that MLB will be bringing its own security for the professional teams. He also said a no-fly zone at the site has been requested around game day, but did not have more information. The major road closure will be on a one-mile stretch of Lansing Road going toward the Field of Dreams, Schroeder said. The Dyersville City Council also approved the closure of portions of 3rd Avenue Southwest, 1st Street Southwest, and 2nd Street Southwest for Beyond the Game activities. Lansing Road will be closed to most motorists from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. August 11th and 12th from Dyersville East Road to Black Hills Road, Kennedy said. Except for people who live on that portion of the road and those with game tickets. Kennedy recommended that motorists use Holy Cross and New Vienna roads as well as Iowa 136 to get around the area. Schroeder said this isn't the first time large crowds have gathered in Dyersville, noting that thousands have shown up for other big Field of Dreams events, such as those commemorating anniversaries of the 1989 Field of Dreams film. Our second piece, planners hear input on wetland proposal for former Flexsteel site. And we have a large centered picture of a number of people listening to a presentation, sitting around some tables. And the caption reads, Laura Karstens, senior planner for East Central Intergovernmental Association, gives a presentation and asks for public input on possible uses for the former Flexsteel property in Dubuque on Thursday. And our article reads, Dubuque County officials pitching the county's acceptance of wetland property to be donated by Flexsteel Industries shared what more they have learned about the site with a generally positive crowd Thursday. Officials spoke with about 10 people during a public input session held at UAW Local 94 Hall in Dubuque. While Flexsteel has not yet made the donation official, the Dubuque County Conservation Board approved a non-binding letter of intent to accept. The site in question consists of two parcels along the Heritage Trail, totaling 14 acres, adjacent to the former Flexsteel plant at 32nd and Jackson Streets in Dubuque. The property currently is being assessed for possible contamination, which, if found, would need to be mitigated before the county would accept the property. In the meantime, Dubuque County Conservation and partners have been gathering input into how the property could be used for conservation and recreation. As currently planned, the property would be managed largely for its rare wetland habitat. Brian Preston, Executive Director of Dubuque County Conservation Board, visited the site recently and said it already is in good shape for that use. There's a nice active beaver lodge, he said. I've seen muskrats, a family of wood ducks, and we've seen sandhill cranes also utilizing the site. So we know it's a good site based on them all using it. That lines up with how Dubuque resident Bob Walton said the rare marshland has been historically. Other than this, there are no cattail marshes around, actually, he said. I have birdwatcher records back in the 1950s and 1960s that show birds that are nowhere else in Iowa, almost. You have a decent wetland that deserves protecting. The county currently plans to improve the Heritage Trail experience as well, partly by removing an existing fence. Where the county portion of the trail meets West 32nd Street, you get down to a section where there's a fence right on the edge of the pavement, said Laura Karstens, senior planner for East Central Intergovernmental Association. The fence should be separate for safety reasons. Trail improvements also may include constructing a parking lot with access to the Heritage Trail through the donated property. Dubuque resident Pat Brimeyer said that could make the site a destination for those with physical disabilities. Even on this trail, you can push somebody on a regular wheelchair and give them the access they deserve, he said. In your pitch, you could say, we're not leaving anybody out. Other parcels of the former Flexsteel site are not included in the donation proposal. The county does not yet know what will happen to them, but Iowa Representative Chuck Eisenhart, Democrat Dubuque, said accepting the current proposal would give conservation officials a foothold in the area in case they want to expand. The public can provide input on the county's conservation website and Facebook page. Karstens said a draft plan should be available in September. Now we continue by taking a little look at our opinion page and the Friday quick takes. And today we have three smiley faces. Our first quick take, these are all presented as the editorial reflection of the Telegraph editorial board. This is their opinion. And our first one is, Dubuque prepares to help citizens facing eviction. The end of the month brings an end to the moratorium on eviction due to non-payment issued by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in September. Bracing for an onslaught of evictions, Dubuque city officials have taken action to address the concern by putting some federal relief aid toward expanding rehousing services. The Dubuque City Council this week approved allocating $163,000 to Community Solutions of Eastern Iowa for its rapid rehousing program. The program serves area residents who are homeless and living outside in a shelter or at a campground. Come August 1st, city officials anticipate an uptick in the number of homeless in the community. To her credit, City of Dubuque Housing and Community Development Director Alexa Steger came up with this plan to help meet this pressing need. An infusion of federal aid will keep the program going through 2023. That's a wise use of stimulus money, lending a hand to those who need it most and addressing a poverty issue in our community. It's good to see government officials seeking solutions for real recovery. Our second piece. Here's another wise use of public money. Six businesses with area ties are partnering with Northeast Iowa Community College to train employees to fill more than 300 new jobs using the state's 260E Iowa Industrial New Jobs Training Program. Everyone understands the dire worker shortage. Companies have had to devise creative solutions just to keep up production. Through this program, companies receive job training funds administered by NICC to help expand and train the regional workforce. NICC has long been a go-to source for workforce training, so this pairing is a natural. Developing talent for hundreds of new local jobs will lift the entire community. And our third smiley face piece. One can never come up with too many ways to honor veterans, and the designation of US 20 as the Medal of Honor Highway provides a unique way to salute our military. Named for the United States' highest and most prestigious recognition to acknowledge a soldier's bravery, the Medal of Honor Highway designation was commemorated Saturday with an unveiling of signage and a ceremony at Chaplain Schmidt Island's Veterans Memorial Plaza. The event included dignitaries like U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson, Republican Iowa, and Iowa Senator Kerry Colker, Republican Dyersville, as well as Iowa American Legion riders, local officials, and citizens. Those present took time out to honor all who fought hard for the freedom of the American people. May all those who travel the Medal of Honor Highway recognize the enormous contributions of the elite honorees and offer their gratitude for the bravery they showed to protect the country they love. And we do have one letter to the editor today. It is from Rick Trausch, Bradley Street, Dubuque. Thanks to Iowa Code, the proposed New Flags, Five Flags referendum has to get 60% approval from Dubuque voters. Big ticket items, like the B branch, should never be allowed to get through without voter approval. As for the July 27th TH article about the Five Flags, I say buy a bigger ice machine, even two. Put the air conditioning units on a preventative maintenance program. This problem should have been checked and handled well ahead of this meeting. Build or add on to the existing bathrooms. I went to several full house hockey games in the day, and there was never a bathroom problem at Five Flags. These small problems do not justify putting the Dubuque taxpayer on the hook for $75 million. I will not vote for a new Five Flags. When the vote comes up, I urge all Dubuquers to vote no on this referendum. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, brought to you in part by Tupaco and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. We are listening to the Friday, July 30th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. This is Ken in the reader's seat. And we now turn our attention to today's obituaries. Anne A. Andraccio. Anne A. Andraccio, 98, of Dubuque, died Saturday, July 21st at Stonehill Care Center. Massive Christian burial will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, July 31st at St. Anthony Catholic Church with the Reverend James Miller officiating. A visitation will be held from 10 a.m. until the time of services. The family kindly asks those not vaccinated to please wear masks. Burial will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery, where military honors will be conducted. The Eaglehoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 JFK Road, is entrusted with arrangements. Anne was born June 2, 1923, in Chicago, the daughter of Charles and Amelia Britschke. She proudly served in the United States Women's Army Corps during World War II. In 2011, she was a proud participant in an honor flight to Washington, D.C. On February 23, 1946, Anne married Joe Andraccio at Nativity Catholic Church, and they had four children. Anne was employed as a bookkeeper at Frank Hardy Advertising, retiring in 1988. After retiring, Anne volunteered at Mercy Hospital for many years. She was an active member of St. Anthony Catholic Church since 1958, and her faith was very important to her. Anne loved to cook and bake. She enjoyed time with family around the dinner table every Sunday, and her grandchildren counted on Granny Annie to bake a fresh batch of chocolate chip cookies every week. Anne also loved to play cards and was an excellent bridge player into her 70s. She enjoyed biking Heritage Trail and later on walking South Grandview with her friends. Anne was deeply loved by her family and will be greatly missed. The family requests no plants. Memorials may be given to St. Anthony Catholic Church or Stonehill Franciscan Services. Anne's family also extends a special thank you to Stonehill Care Center. Joseph H. Fecker, Jr. Joseph H. Fecker, Jr., 77, of Dubuque, passed away Tuesday, July 27th at Mercy Medical Center. Visitation will be from 2 to 5 p.m. Sunday, August 1st, at Eaglehoff Siegert Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road, Dubuque, where there will be a prayer service at 5 p.m. Mass will be at 10 a.m. Monday, August 2nd at St. Anthony Catholic Church. Reverend Stephen Rozanke will officiate. The family kindly requests that all guests wear masks at the funeral home and church. Interment will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery with military honors accorded by the Dubuque Marine Corps League. Condolences may be shared at www.eaglehoffsiegertcasper.com. Joseph was born June 10, 1944, in Dubuque, the son of Joseph and Agnes Waldschmidt Fecker. At the age of 11, while shoveling snow, Joseph managed to catch the neighbor girl Barbara Jones when she slid while getting off the bus. They later married on January 7, 1967, at Nativity Catholic Church. Joseph served his country with the U.S. Navy as a Seabee, during which time he achieved the world record for the 50-mile hike and was served breakfast in bed the next day by his commander. He was an avid motorcycle rider and was a member of the Hawkeye Motorcycle Club, the Mighty Mississippi Motorcycle Club, and the Harley Owners Group. Joseph was a talented woodworker and all-around handyman. He never hired anyone else to do the work, and he was always willing to help out a neighbor or friend. He was a hard-working man and retired from Barnstead Thermaline. Joseph enjoyed watching basketball and football, Spotting bald eagles was always a thrill for him. He was incredibly active before Parkinson's disease started to take its toll. Joseph was a devoted husband, father, and grandfather, and will be sadly missed. The family would like to thank the staff at Mercy Medical Center and medical associates, and memorials may be made to the family. James W. Kramer, Hawkins, Wisconsin. James W. Jim Kramer, 59, of Hawkins, Wisconsin, died at home on Saturday, July 10th. There will be a private family gathering to celebrate Jim's life. The Nash Jackin Funeral Home in Ladysmith, Wisconsin, is assisting the family. Jim was born in Dubuque, December 28, 1961, to Joseph W. and Mary Ann Kramer. He raised beef cattle on his farm and was an avid dog lover. He was preceded in death by his parents and siblings. Thomas C. Burbach. Thomas C. Burbach, 64, of Dubuque, Iowa, formerly of Pacifica, California, died Wednesday, July 28th at home, surrounded by family. A celebration of life will be held Saturday, November 27th at Sunset Hall, Dickeyville. Tom would love to have all his family and friends attend if possible. Burial will take place at Holy Ghost Cemetery, Dickeyville. Cassie McNett Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Cuba City is assisting the family. Tom was born December 13, 1956 in Dubuque, the son of John and Jeannie Cross Burbach. He graduated in 1975 from Wallert High School. Tom was always ready for an adventure, so he moved to California, where he was more able to enjoy his love for the performing arts. There, he met his partner of 36 years, Ivan Holum. Ivan preceded Tom in death November 23, 2019. Tom was employed by AT&T for many years and retired as a systems analyst in 2014. Tom was a kind and generous son, brother, uncle, and friend who was dedicated to his family and was especially fond of his nieces and nephews. Online condolences for the family may be left at www.caseymcnett.com. Diane L. Bartles, Belmont, Wisconsin. Diane Lynn Bartles, 53, of Belmont, Wisconsin, died Wednesday, July 28th, after a lifelong battle with rheumatoid arthritis. Memorial services will be held at 3 p.m. Saturday, July 31st, at Melby Funeral Home and Crematory, Platteville. Pastor Mary Ann Floki will officiate. Burial will be at Resurrection Cemetery, Belmont. Friends may call from 1 p.m. until the time of the service at the funeral home. Memorials may be made to the Diane L. Bartles Memorial Fund. Online condolences can be made at www.melbyfh.com. Diane was born July 25, 1968, in Platteville, Wisconsin, daughter of Merlin and Geraldine Wiest Bartles. Diane graduated from Belmont High School in 1986 and received her BA in Speech and Communication from UW-Platteville in 1991. She later received her master's degree from UW-Platteville. Diane worked at Southwest Technical College Fenimore for many years in library media as a support specialist. Diane enjoyed traveling, stamping, scrapbooking, reading, and watching the Hallmark Channel. Diane especially enjoyed country music and attending concerts. Diane always enjoyed spending time with her family and her many friends. Barbara B. Miller. Barbara B. Miller, 78, of Dubuque, died Tuesday, July 27th. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, August 3rd at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Chris E. Hafel, Farley. Chris E. Hafel, 66, of Farley, died Wednesday, July 28th. Visitation will be held from 3 to 8 p.m. Monday, August 2nd at Rife Funeral Home in Farley. Services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, August 3rd at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Farley. Marilyn F. Jenkins. Marilyn F. Jenkins, 80, of Dubuque, died Tuesday, July 27th. Visitation will be held from 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, July 31st at Hope Church, where services will be held at 11 a.m. Tri-State Cremation Center of East Dubuque, Illinois is assisting the family. Bernice Williamson. Bernice Williamson, 80, of Dubuque, died Thursday, July 15th. Eaglehoff, Siegert & Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road, is assisting the family. Graveside services will be held at 1:30 p.m. Monday, August 2nd at St. Boniface Cemetery, New Vienna, Iowa. And with our passings of sadness to many of us, we have the joy of the new arrivals and quite a few births to share with you, beginning with Tuesday, July 27th. Graves Bauman, Tyler Graves and Geraldine Bauman of Dubuque, a girl, Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center. Wednesday, July 28th, Kramer, Toma Kramer, Mark Kramer, and Madonna Toma Kramer of Cascade, a girl at Mercy One. Lynch Chase and Aaliyah Lynch of Piasta, Iowa, a boy at Unity Point Health Hospital in Dubuque. Schuler, Stuart and Becky Schuler of Piasta, a boy at Finley. Thursday, July 29th, Miller, TJ and Allison Miller of Dubuque, a girl at Mercy One. Now we turn back to a little bit more news from our tri-states. Kids go for gold in summer leisure program events. And we have a large picture with some young ladies playing volleyball, particularly one in the foreground. And the caption beneath it reads, Chloe McDermott, 9, of Asbury, Iowa, plays volleyball during Dubuque Leisure Services Olympic-themed activities at Allison Henderson Park in Dubuque on Thursday. And our article reads, every time his team scored a point in volleyball, J.J. Gentry let out an excited yell. J.J. 10 of Dubuque was one of about 20 kids playing volleyball, play fighting with pool noodles, and coloring animal masks Thursday at Allison Henderson Park in Dubuque. The activities were part of the City Leisure Services Department's Playground Explorations Program, which provides activities in which children can participate throughout the summer. This week, the program includes a series of Olympics-themed activities, complete with teams competing for points, to coincide with the Tokyo Games. JJ said he was competing as part of Team USA at Allison Henderson Park. He had played several games throughout the week, but said dodgeball had been his favorite so far. Because I'm in baseball, I just like throwing things and catching things, JJ said. Brian Feldit, recreation supervisor with the Leisure Services Department, said this year's Playground Explorations program has seen between 450 and 500 different children participate in activities so far, with an average of 180 kids coming out each week. The program runs until at least August 6th. Activities last from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday at Allison Henderson, Flora, and Comiskey Parks, which Feldit noted were the most popular sites. Jackson and Murphy Parks have activities in the mornings, while the parks at Marshall and Hoover Elementary Schools have activities in the afternoons. Our numbers are up a little this summer, Feldit said. We have more parks offered this summer, too. I think families are much more willing to come out to parks and get their kids involved in leisure services programs again after COVID-19. He noted that free meals also are provided to children as part of the program through a partnership with the Boys and Girls Club of Greater Dubuque. Landon Rapp, 10 of Asbury, said he has been having fun during the summer program, meeting new friends and catching up with the ones he met through the program last year. He also noted that his team, Team Canada, was in the lead for Olympics week at Allison Henderson Park. My favorites were dodgeball and the slip and slide, Landon said. In dodgeball, it's team versus team, and on the slip and slide, I can go super fast on it. Landon's sister, Carson Rapp 10, also said she was enjoying the activities. "We've been doing a lot of water stuff since it's been so hot," she said. However, Carson lauded frozen treats as the highlight of the week. "My favorite part was getting popsicles," she exclaimed. Now I'll turn to some bits and pieces of area news in brief. From Benton, Wisconsin, the next hearing is set for the Lafayette County man accused of a stabbing. A Lafayette County man accused of stabbing another man during an altercation recently waived his preliminary hearing. The next court hearing for Benjamin R. Everson, 33, of Benton, is scheduled for September 20th. He is charged in Lafayette County Circuit Court with first-degree recklessly endangering safety, substantial battery intended bodily harm, bail jumping, criminal damage to property, disorderly conduct, and possession of drug paraphernalia. Court documents state that Miranda Mucho told authorities that Everson grabbed her by the neck and pushed her into a wall on May 25th as he was moving out his belongings from her residence in New Diggings. Short time later, as Everson was sitting in his vehicle outside, he was approached by Emil L. Melson, 33, of Platteville, who had just arrived. Documents state that Melson reported that Everson stabbed him, after which Melson punched Everson in the face twice. Everson told authorities that Melson punched him, which prompted him to stab Melson in self-defense. He also said that Melson had swung a bat or bar at him, striking his vehicle. Authorities reported that Everson then backed up his vehicle into the one driven by Melson before Everson fled the scene. Melson was taken by ambulance to Southwest Health in Platteville, where he received stitches for a puncture wound to the bicep and was released. Melson also has been charged in connection to the incident. He faces charges of substantial battery intent bodily harm, criminal damage to property, disorderly conduct, possession of amphetamine and intent to deliver, possession of drug paraphernalia to manufacture methamphetamine, and maintaining a drug trafficking place. Police. Two women face felony charges after entering Dubuque home to get child. Police said two women face felony charges for entering a Dubuque home without permission to take a child. Emma K. Lazzori, 28, of East Dubuque, and Kelly R. Lazzori, 58, of Galena, were both arrested at about 11:15 a.m. Wednesday at 1360 South Grandview on charges of second-degree burglary. Emma Lazzori also is charged with child endangerment. Court documents state that Emma and Kelly Lazzori entered the home of Eleanor A. Bust, 59, of 1360 South Grandview, without permission to retrieve Emma Lazzori's 2-year-old child. Bust is the child's grandmother and was watching the child. During a disturbance, Bust told police that Emma Lazzori grabbed her by the neck and head while Kelly Lazzori attempted to grab the child, according to documents. Kelly Lazzori allegedly kicked Bust in the hip. Once outside, Emma Lazzori shoved Bust toward a garage. Woman faces neglect charge after overheating dog freed from vehicle in Dubuque. A woman faces a neglect charge after police said an overheating dog was freed from an unoccupied locked vehicle in Dubuque. Kara Ann Kolke, 39, of Evansville, Wisconsin, was arrested at 6:17 p.m. Wednesday in the 4000 block of McDonald Drive on a charge of animal neglect. Court documents state that police in Dubuque Animal Control responded at 1:59 p.m. Wednesday to a parking lot in the 2600 block of Raven Oaks Drive for a report of a dog locked in an unoccupied vehicle. The outside temperature was 87 degrees when the dog was freed and taken to Dubuque Regional Humane Society for evaluation. The dog had an internal body temperature of 106 degrees. Animal control staff said dogs begin to suffer brain damage if their body temperature reaches 107 degrees, documents state. Kulke is the dog's owner and was eventually located. Thunderstorms sweep through area, bringing heavy rain, damaging winds. Thunderstorms brought heavy rain and damaging winds overnight to portions of the tri-state area. Winds toppled two 2-foot diameter trees a mile north of Dubuque, according to reports submitted to the National Weather Service. The storm also dumped 1.35 inches of rain on the Dubuque area. A trained spotter in Rickardsville reported 1.84 inches had fallen from the storms as of about 6 a.m. Thursday. Tree limbs were broken and shingles blown off in Burton, Wisconsin, an unincorporated community in the town of Waterloo in Grant County, and the Weather Service reported a 51-mile-per-hour wind gust in Nora, Illinois, a village in eastern Joe Davies County. Authorities seek information on Grant County hit and run. Authorities seek information on a hit and run crash this week in Grant County. County Sheriff's Department officials were notified at 8:30 a.m. Monday of the crash on Grant County A near its intersection with University Farm Road in Little Grant Township, according to a press release. The release states that a vehicle was eastbound on Grant County A when it failed to negotiate a sharp curve, left the road, and crashed into a fence. The vehicle left the scene and the driver did not report the crash. Officials ask that anyone with information about the incident call the Sheriff's Department at 608-723-2157. Dubuque Service Club installs second used eyeglass collection box. A second collection box is accepting used eyeglasses and hearing aids in Dubuque. Dubuque Noon Lions Club recently installed a collection box at Hy-Vee in 400 South Locust Street. The club's first box was installed earlier this year at Asbury Plaza Hy-Vee, 2395 Northwest Arterial. The club has collected 1,670 pairs of eyeglasses and 26 hearing aids in the box. The eyeglasses and hearing aids are transported to the Lions Eyeglass Recycling and Hearing Aid Center to be refashioned and provided to people in need. Local luncheon to celebrate India's independence. An upcoming event in Dubuque will celebrate the Indian holiday recognizing the country's independence. A free India Independence Day luncheon will be held from noon to 2 p.m. August 14th at Multicultural Family Center, 1157 Central Avenue. The event features an Indian food lunch and a question and answer session featuring members of the community originally from India. Space is limited to 100 guests and online registration is required by visiting bit.ly/3refkgn. COVID-19 precautions will be enforced, including social distancing and wearing masks. Asbury Church to host mobile food pantry. An Asbury Church will host a mobile food pantry event this weekend. The drive-through food distribution will begin at 9 a.m. Saturday, July 31st at Lord of Life Lutheran Church, 2899 Hales Mill Road. Organizers ask that participants arrive at or about 8:30 a.m., according to an online announcement. The event is open to the public and in and around the Dubuque area. Volunteers will load pre-boxed food into attendees' cars. Food will be distributed until it is gone. We do have one more piece from the Tri-States I overlooked. Regulators disagree on rescinding approval of transmission line. A deadlocked Wisconsin commission has declined to rescind and subsequently reissue a construction permit for a contentious high-voltage transmission line, a project that is now the subject of litigation in 4 court hearings. The decision of Wisconsin's Public Service Commission on Thursday comes as the 3 utility companies backing the venture have invested more than $126 million into planning and pre-construction work for the Cardinal Hickory Creek project, which includes clearing forest in Iowa along the route of the 102-mile line and will follow as it stretches from Dubuque County to Dane County, Wisconsin. But PSC chairperson Rebecca Cameron Valcott said that to rescind the permit as the transmission companies have requested would undermine the process by which she and 2 fellow commissioners approved the project and possibly establish an undesirable precedent. Are we signaling to applicants in the future that, okay, if you guys don't like what you see in a final order or if you're being dragged through litigation, then you can just come back and we'll do a take back? She asked. The request from American Transmission Company IDC Midwest and Dairyland Power Cooperative to rescind the permit comes after revelations that former Public Service Commissioner Michael Hoopshus, who along with Valkwick and Commissioner Ellen Norwalk unanimously authorized construction of the $492 million line in 2019, sent encrypted messages to a company employee and contractor for several years and during the proceeding. The companies asserted that the correspondence was unrelated to the case and might not be retrievable, but opponents allege that it is the latest instance of excessive ex parte communication between Hoopsch and the applicants, a violation of state statute. In court testimony, Hoopsch has denied the allegations. Hoopsch's position on the PSC has since been filed by Tyler Huber, who has recused himself from the case. The PSC issued a notice of its intent to rescind the permit earlier this month and requested comments as to how it should proceed. The transmission companies said rescission and reapproval of the project will render pending court appeals moot and end the investigation into Hoopsch's actions, thereby avoiding protracted litigation. Norwalk agreed with the argument. "This is a matter of efficiency," she said. "Why there needs to be all the future issues going on in state court about a commissioner that's not even here anymore, it's a waste of everybody's time," Valkwick and Norwalk both rejected opponents' assertions that Hoopsch's conduct indicates the public can no longer expect to receive a fair and impartial hearing from the PSC. However, Valkwick said rescission is unnecessary. "I understand that there are risks, financial risks, certainly, on behalf of the applicant," she said. "Instead of rescission, they also have the power to slow and pump the brakes and not continue down the path of construction. It doesn't necessarily have to be laid out at our doorstep." The commissioners intend to revisit the request at an upcoming meeting. You have been listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, supported in part by DUPACO and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. This is Ken. I've been reading from the Friday, July 30th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. Go out and take a walk. Do whatever you need to do to put a smile on your face. Until next week, take care.